Welcome to episode 4 of Techish. I'm here, Michael Behane, once more, and with
Abadesi. I realize that you always say your full name and I say only my first name.
Because Abadesi, your name is unique and my name is like some generic name. Like if I'm turning around in the street and someone says Michael, I don't even bother to look anymore.
Really?
Yeah, so I have to say Michael Behane so people know that.
Oh, that's so sad. It's me. Yeah. That's like when I went to Germany and I was riding the metro and I kept hearing Abba, Abba, Abba. And I was like,
what does it mean?
Why is everyone here called Abba? But Abba means but in Germany. So we'd be like blah, 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 but blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, okay. A-B-E-R.
Yeah. I should have been named something unique, unfortunately.
Cool. So I can't believe we're 4 episodes in, man.
I know. And shout out to everybody giving feedback. It's been amazing. Like,
yeah, grateful for the listens, the follows, the shares. We have a global audience.
Yeah, half of you lot are in the States, apparently. Half of you lot are in the UK.
Just keeping it transatlantic.
Yeah.
So how we operate in the tech world.
I don't know. Should we jump into it or you got something brand new to talk about?
I don't have anything brand new
since,
to talk
since
about.
Since Black Panther, like, there hasn't been any real, like...
Important films.
Important, like,
tech
things that you've
biopics.
Caught up on, yeah.
No, sadly not. I think we should jump into winners and losers.
Okay, who's going first? Who's our winner? Our first winner of the week?
Our first winner of the week are people that want to learn how to code. Because WeWork is throwing $1 million into sponsorships for Flatiron Bootcamp.
Yeah, so WeWork is they purchased Flatiron, which is a coding bootcamp in New York. And now they're expanding to the UK. And in tandem with their expansion into the UK, they're giving $1 million in sponsorship for underrepresented groups to learn how to code and whatnot.
I need to get involved.
Yeah, hold on. I was going to tell my girlfriend to go apply for that as well. Like,
everybody.
Black
everyone,
women, go.
Yeah.
Like,
no both. Excuses now.
Yeah, so they are using that essentially to compete with General Assembly and all the other big boys in the coding bootcamp game. And there's a few other bootcamps that I know have done similar thing. I think Makers Academy out here has done something similar.
Yeah,
right?
Makers Academy is interesting. Le Wagon, which is like a French one that does a lot of stuff at Google Campus. They also teach coding classes. Mm.
There's a few now in the States where basically they don't charge you anything up front and you pay them once you've got your salary in place, once you've been hired. And I would love to see that in the UK because I do feel like one of the things that obviously the cost of a bootcamp is so preventative that a lot of people just don't think it's for them or they haven't got the access to that kind of resource.
Agreed. I think it's really important that we don't like overstate the value of tech jobs because, yes, it's important to improve technical skills, increase the number of people with technical roles, but not every job, you know, is a tech job and not everyone that learns coding skills ends up getting like
So when you say tech job, you mean like a coding, a software engineer type role?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Like this whole learning to code thing, it's definitely been overly pushed. But I mean, it's, God bless anybody that wants to do these courses. I think if you can get employment afterwards and, you know, it's something that you're interested in, then go for it. And I'm glad that WeWork is putting their money where their mouth is.
So what do you think about WeWork, which is a co-working space? I know they've experimented with co-living as well. One of the highest valued companies in tech at the moment.
They've raised so much money. Like, it's crazy. I don't know the exact figure. And we're trying to get our stats better on the show.
don't have the number.
Okay, they have raised in excess, I would imagine, of like 50 to 100 million. We'll fact check that later.
Fact checking.
But, and some people have said that they're overcapitalized essentially. So that's why they've gone about and acquired places like Flatiron, which are boot camps, which wasn't their original, this is not their original business model.
Yes.
Which is co-working. Have you ever worked in co-working space?
I mean, I have.
Would you ever?
I would probably, just because working from home can get quite lonely, especially if you don't have a pet or anything like that. I'm checking the WeWork funding round, by the way, because I want to make sure that people have the numbers to back them up. I mean, God, they've been getting funding round. Their first seed round was in 2011.
It's crazy. The interesting thing is, though, I saw that they said that when they came to the UK, co-working spaces already existed here, so they didn't necessarily have to educate the market.
Yeah.
But is that an indication that it's not necessarily that much of an innovative like business model? I don't necessarily understand like how they've managed to raise so much capital. Essentially, it's an office building. They've split up the rooms, and maybe there might be a software layer where you can book the space. That's quite nifty, but
it is interesting because I mean, I just double checked now, by the way, for people who want to know the stats. Apparently, Crunchbase isn't always the most accurate, but $7.3 billion in funding. Okay. So
I was well underneath that. I was like, yeah, definitely more than 50 million. They've gone above and beyond. That's a ridiculous amount.
They're definitely one of the most highly valued companies in tech as well. But it is interesting because we talk about them like they're a tech company, but they're a real estate company.
Exactly.
Where have they innovated, really?
That's what I'm talking about. They've got tech valuations, but they haven't necessarily... They're not necessarily a tech play per se.
No.
And I mean, to be honest, like if you're any kind of company now and you're trying to raise money, just come up with some tech angle. You'll be able to raise money a hell of a lot easier. And this is a really scrupulous thing I'm saying, but like we touched upon it last week, the company with the mayonnaise company, they were angled as a tech company. Yeah. They raised, you know, oodles of cash.
Oodles.
Yeah, listen to our last episode if you want to find out the details about that.
That's a scientific term, by the way, oodles of cash.
Literally. So if you want to raise capital, call yourself a tech company. That's
I wonder though, like with a company like WeWork, which has got a lot of press and in a way has pulled off this incredible, you know, branding exercise where they've come to be known as one of the biggest tech companies, even though there's no real proprietary technology in what they're doing. And they're still going out and raising money, expanding across the world. I did a talk at WeWork Brooklyn when I was in New York in January, and they were telling me some of the amazing staff I met there about plans to expand in Brazil, Chile, Mexico. I mean, it's just crazy. And then a part of you kind of thinks like, oh, okay, so are these scholarships that they're now investing in to support underrepresented founders, their way of, you know, kind of giving a nod to the community, giving something back to the community. When you first told me about this news story, I immediately thought about corporate social responsibility and these big, you know, huge corporations like BP and Shell that go, oh, we're offsetting carbon footprints. You know, we're doing all this like crazy super capitalistic stuff.
It's not as bad as that because those companies kind of do pollute the environment.
And no, they pollute the environment too.
They throw back a little chump change back.
I'll give another example. Accenture, PwC, Deloitte, whatever. There's like a lot of highly profitable, fast-growing companies out there that don't necessarily give back to the communities in which they're expanding. Right?
Yeah.
So like let's say WeWork. So WeWork's going to go to Brazil. Brazil, like many other countries around the world, has a really wide gap between the richest and the poorest. What impact, theoretically, is WeWork going to have on closing the gap between the rich and the poor?
Absolutely none. Right. Probably exacerbate it, to be honest.
I go to WeWorks in London. You know, I'm not trying to throw shade here. This is just like observational stuff. They feel pretty corporate.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's kind of the same kind of people.
Yeah.
Same kind of things going on. I haven't necessarily seen WeWork in the state schools or WeWork in the refugee camps of Calais or like, you know what I mean? Like there are big social issues that no money is going towards. And like, hey, I'm grateful that they're doing this because underrepresented people definitely need to learn how to code and there isn't any money going into that. But a part of me is just like, there are probably also other avenues that if they really, really wanted to do some social impact, they could explore.
Absolutely. And I mean, $1 million... to be honest, it's a drop in the ocean in comparison to the amount of capital they've raised.
They probably spent that on the bar at their last social event.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. They do like...
get invited as well, guys. Come on, what's going on?
No,
like,
for real,
if you're
going
to spend that kind of money, can I get a shout out,
please? They do like festivals. They hired like Madison Square Garden.
No, that's ridiculous.
And did like live shows, big
names. If you're like
an
investor in a VC fund, like you're a... I don't know what the term is. What's the term for someone who's invested into a VC fund?
LP, limited partner.
An LP, there we go. Like you're seeing so much of your actual hard-earned money being splurged on those kind of amenities and festivals for like it's interesting really and generally speaking it is a bit of a I don't know if I call it a virtuous circle, but it's a really weird issue where companies are raising a whole bunch of money and then they are investing in staff working in places like WeWork, which is then raising a bunch of money completely based off companies that are just have raised venture. So are these real businesses take out all this capital and what is there?
It's interesting, though, because I guess there's, like, an implicit assumption that the cost of property will always go up. You know, there's that, like, really famous quote, like, buy land because there won't be making any more of it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you think of the business model of companies like WeWork and other co-working spaces, what they effectively do is buy a long-term lease.
Yeah.
So they go to developers and say, hey, we're going to buy this lease for 10 years, 20 years, whatever. And then as every year goes up, they increase the prices. So they can lock it in at a flat rate.
Yeah.
And then every time point beyond that is profit.
Mm.
And then, you know, they run events, they do partnerships, they do whatever, whatever. So in a way, maybe it's actually like one of the lower risk business models that we have within the VC ecosystem. Because like you say, land is in a finite supply. We're not getting any more of it. So
no, I agree. It's low. It's not the most highest risk venture, but in terms of its valuation, it's obviously excessive, I think. I think both of us would agree to that, right? Its valuation? You don't think it's excessive? 7 billion? Well, that's how much they've raised. So God knows what their valuation is. The valuation is going
to
be much more
than
that.
I think they're definitely like in the top five. Oh, I'm going to have to fact check it. You know, let's hire a fact checker.
I think we should.
But it's definitely like one of the most highly valued private tech companies for sure.
Yeah.
Is it excessive? Yeah, probably. But then at the same time, you know, the property game is a very, very highly valued one. And it's a property company. And they've got some prime real estate in all the biggest capital cities. And now they're expanding globally. Like, and let's face it, if we were, let's say the nomadic lifestyle, co-working, freelance lifestyle suddenly dies for whatever reason, they'll just sell that stuff for residential developments or like whatever. Like it's still a valuable asset in and of itself.
But it would be interesting to compare the value of the assets they have on their books versus the valuation of the company.
Definitely.
And I would, like we said, we need a fact checker, but I would probably almost bet my life that the gap would be absolutely ginormous.
I will say one thing, though, and I'm not an expert in accounting or like private equity, but like it is really important to remember that like when companies are valued, the valuation is a component of lots of different parts, of which assets are just one.
Of course, for example, it's
super common for like there to be like a multiplier added to value and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, like, hey, I'd be open to finding out a bit more. Like if people understand more of the nuances behind this huge valuation, like what makes WeWork so special? Even people that work at WeWork, holla, I want to know more.
Yeah, trust me.
Or if you know any good articles, let me know.
I want to actually shout out a rapper.
Please.
Called Nipsey Hussle. He actually
Nipsey.
Is. Yeah, he's
Does
an
he have
LA-
cold nipples? I just imagine that every music video, he's got like a t-shirt with his nips poking through. Like,
he
Nipsey,
basically
y'all.
Opened up a co-working space in his neighborhood, which is Crenshaw, which is like...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's from there and he's, you know, set up businesses there. And, but he's set up a co-working space called Vector 90.
Nice.
So just touching upon what you've mentioned about how, like, are these companies setting up co-working spaces where they actually might need... development might be needed, as opposed to just capitalizing on, you know, Silicon Roundabout or Silicon Valley or whatever. So that's an example of somebody that's doing that. And I think we need more of that, really.
Yeah, let's see more of it. Let's make it happen.
Yeah. So who's up next then? And on Winners and Losers Part 2.
I was just going to say, we see like Skepta opening up a coding boot camp.
Yeah, why not?
Let's do
I'd go to that. Grand boot camp.
Okay, winners. So we have Lyft winning, Uber losing.
Lyft, we don't have them in the UK actually. I wish we did.
Lyft is amazing. So
I've never used it before.
Okay, so I used Lyft for the first time earlier this year. I spent a few weeks out in New York and San Francisco. I don't know about you guys, but when I first downloaded the Uber app many, many moons ago, I was just like, oh, these Uber cars are so nice. I'm in my Prius, I'm getting free suites, free
bottled
water, whatever.
What was so nice about it, as in just the experience?
Well, I just hated the experience of minicabs. I always felt that minicab drivers were rude, and it's like, oh, can we stop at a cash machine? And they're always like kissing their teeth, rolling their eyes, telling you can't have a kebab in the back of their car. Let me eat, man. Anyway.
You can't do that in Uber either.
Okay, look, I digress. But then when Uber came around, like I didn't need to stop at the cash point. I ordered it from my phone. Obviously, phones had advanced as well because my old BlackBerry would not have supported Uber.
Hell
anyway.
No.
I just feel like, at least in London, the quality of the cars of Uber has decreased significantly.
You think so?
I feel like now I get into Ubers and I'm like, do you live in your car? It smells like you live in your car, man.
Oh,
like,
not,
hey, if you do live in your car, like, I'm sorry.
It's because
but
when they launched UberX, I don't know if they have UberX in the States, but originally Uber was meant to be... quite a high-end service.
Yeah, Uber Exec and Uber Lux.
Yeah, but that's how it was. That was the original
model. Pitch deck.
Yeah. So eventually they came out with UberX, which is basically Uber for the masses, essentially. So I think that's what you're noticing when you're like, the quality of cars has decreased because now they're trying to get as many drivers on the road
as possible. Yeah. I was still ordering UberXs and there were still Priuses. I'm just saying that I think that as it's grown bigger, what used to happen was that, because Uber always used to try to poach me for this role, like Uber operations, whatever.
Yeah.
And there used to be a role where when you signed up as an Uber driver, you literally went to the office and someone would onboard you.
So I thought it still was.
Make sure you, I don't think they do that anymore, because I've spoken to Uber drivers who are like, I'd never met anyone from the company in real life.
Wow.
They don't even give phones anymore. Uber used to give you phones as well. They used to give you an iPhone with all the setup. Now they're just like, no man, download the app, like just do your thing, whatever. Send us your bank details. So I think as it scaled, that quality just went down because there was no external factor. Mm. Anyway, going into Lyft or like using Lyft for the first time, I was pleasantly surprised to find that all the drivers were super friendly guys, way more the idea of the sharing economy that I thought. So people who are students, musicians, doing some kind of job where they're not in an office 9 to 5 and trying to supplement their income.
They still had the pink moustache thing in front.
What, on their faces?
Yeah, no, on the front of the car.
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I think
maybe
so.
They do.
I thought that's what they were famous for.
I mean, they also just like have a sticker, which is what I saw. But yeah, no, like I just really enjoyed taking Lyft, and I just felt that overall the cars were cleaner and the drivers were nicer, and I had some really intelligent conversations with them, which was interesting.
You're saying that Lyft drivers are smarter than Uber drivers?
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that like for such a long time, I've been like, oh, why aren't Lyft here? Why aren't Lyft here?
I've
Uber expanding like mad. But now I'm like, Lyft are smart, because the logistics business, as we've touched on before, is a cruel business. Those profit margins are next to nothing. So what Lyft have done is just been like, you know what, let's just get market concentration in the places where we're good. And now look at them.
So yeah, the reason why we brought them up is because they've released a press release saying that they've have hit $1 billion in revenue.
That's amazing.
And they're actually growing faster than Uber. Yeah. So this is the classic, like, let's release a PR statement shitting on our competitors. Sorry, I'm not meant to swear. That's why I'm penning the swear jar. So yeah, go Lyft, really. I mean, I've been begging for them to come to London for the longest period of time. I feel like when there's no competition and there's only one player really in the city, you see the quality decline. And also, it's better for the drivers that there's an alternative. Yeah. Also, they can make more money. There's competition between the two companies. Who wants to hire the drivers, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, Lyft, if you're listening to this, please come to London.
Yeah, come to London.
And congratulations on hitting that
target. I've even heard Uber drivers tell me they can't wait for Lyft to come to London, which makes me laugh. But what happened to that Uber boycott and the Uber ban? That's just like dead. Like that Uber boycott lasted 30 seconds.
I never said that I was going to partake in that. There was a whole delete Uber basically.
Yeah, people are so fickle, especially in tech, especially on social media. Like hashtag delete Uber. And then it's like location Uber.
But I do think there has been a significant number of people that have moved to Lyft, especially in the States. And people, I know a few people that are saying, I don't use Uber for ethical reasons.
Yeah. I've heard that, but then I'm like, show me your phone.
I think in London, we haven't seen it because there literally is no alternative.
That's the thing.
We haven't got it. As in, unless you want to use a black cab.
And it's a difficult one too, because the thing is, I know women that work at Uber, and they are women who I admire. Like, you know, they have incredible people in the marketing and business development team. I've worked with these women in previous roles. And a part of me is kind of like, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult because they're honestly doing the best that they can in the situation they're in, and a lot of the fucked up things that happen. Oh, penny in the swear jar. A lot of the bad things.
You saw the look
happen.
She gave me when I saw her as well.
I'm such a hypocrite. But yeah, a lot of the bad things that happen were like beyond their control. So yeah, it is a tough one. But I was just wondering, if you're listening and you were like, oh, I'm going to boycott Uber, I'd be curious to know, have you stuck to that?
Please call in on 055. We haven't got a call in line. Yeah, it's difficult really when you're an individual that works within a machine that essentially has had instances of corruption. You feel bad to punish your friend by boycotting a company by boycotting my company, you're going to hurt the people that work there, your friends.
I mean, I remember when I was working at Amazon and then The Guardian run that story that they run every year about the fulfillment centers and workers not being paid enough, and people be like, oh, first of all, people assumed I worked in the fulfillment center, and I was like, thanks guys. I went to uni to pack boxes. I mean, I'm sure some people did, but I didn't. But yeah, I mean, when people are like, oh, you know, why do you work for Amazon? Amazon, Amazon, Amazon. I was just like, they pay well.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. Yeah, people do. If someone comes to you for career advice and they're like, I want to work somewhere, how important do you stress working somewhere where you agree with the ethics of the company? Is that a case-by-case basis, or is that
That's such an interesting question, because my friend literally asked me the same question the other day, where someone that he knows works for like a lot of very unsavory brands. And he was like, how can you do marketing for these brands that are just like going around basically like creating products that kill people knowingly and stuff like that?
What brands are these?
Well, you know, tobacco companies, weapons companies, etc. And he was like, oh, it's just a job, isn't it? And he was just like, but what? And so it's clearly a very personal decision, but I will speak for my own self. You know, I kind of think the most content people, I'm not going to say happy because that's whatever relative, but the most content and fulfilled people are the people that live a purpose-driven life. And I think for you to feel like your life has purpose, you have to be doing work that aligns with things that you believe in. Because if you're doing work, if you're spending 8 hours a day behind a desk, pumping effort into something you don't care about, then there's no purpose there. Mm. You're literally just working to put food on the table. And if you're working to put food on the table, then you could do any job.
Mm.
And I think for that reason, just be wary of like being attracted to something just because, oh, it's like a good status thing. Like, yeah, I want to work at Goldman Sachs. Because, you know, even when people say to me like, oh, you worked at Amazon, can you help me with my application? I'll be like, yes.
Nope.
No, but I'll be like, look, I'll tell you what you need to do to prepare for the interview. But I want you to know that I wanted to quit a few months in, and the only reason I didn't was because I spent my starting bonus and I couldn't afford to pay it back. But, you know, so I'm very honest with them, and that's my experience. And I tell them, you know, that's my experience. Obviously, my identity comes into that. I'm
Does
a woman.
It put people
may
off?
Not be the same. Or, no, of course not.
Oh, wow.
Because most of the people I speak to are in their early 20s and they just want a job and they just want status.
Well.
And I get it. You know, sometimes you need to find out on your own firsthand. This is your one.
This is my one. Elon Musk. So Elon Musk was recently interviewed, I think it was at South by Southwest, and he was talking about his endeavors to get us to Mars. And he basically said that one of the reasons why he's so driven to get us to Mars is that he fears that there will be an extinction event, on Earth, and that we need to diversify humanity, essentially, and have a different place where if there is a world war, and he... In the quote, I'll read it to you, actually. The quote was, I think it's unlikely that we won't have another world war again. There probably will be one at some point. So the base on Mars is a hedge against human extinction.
Wow. Okay.
I know you don't like Elon Musk.
It's not that
but
I
what
don't,
I'm gonna
don't
say,
say
in his
this.
Defense
That's
is
fake
that...
news. That's fake news. Elon, if you're listening.
Listen back to episode one. She don't like it.
No, it's just that a day cannot go by.
But who
in
else is
technology.
Working on his problems, though? Who else is working
There's
on...
There's like millions of women whose voices are drowned out. Millions of people of color, LGBTQI, disabled people out there hustling, grinding.
Those people are drowned out by the dude that's making some basic app. I'll hate on those guys. The guys that are getting press release on TechCrunch.
They
came out of Stanford. They raised $1 million out of Stanford straight away, but not Elon Musk.
There's disproportional attention given to Elon Musk. It's disproportional. Like, come on, someone's got to stand up for me on this. Shout out in the comments. Because look, I love the guy. Neuralink, that's cool. I actually, like, as soon as the jobs board went up, I was on that.
Okay, there we go.
I couldn't do any of them because they all wanted science things. But I'm not throwing shade at Elon Musk. I respect Elon Musk. His contribution to humanity is going to go into the history books or whatever. But every day...
So overrated is what you're saying?
Just over-publicized. I'm just saying he has a very active PR machine. And sometimes I'm just like, come on, like give some space to someone else, Elon.
Yeah. But who else is going to come out there and talk about these type of things? Human extinction. Who
Other
else
people
is thinking
talking
about
them. Nick Bostrom.
Yeah, but
like,
he's not doing anything. He's an author. All due respect.
He's an academic.
He's an academic. And shout out to my academics. You're doing important
Larry
work.
Larry Kurzweil.
Also basically an academic, essentially. He works as a kind
he's
of like...
He's the head
a,
of the Google Lab.
The distinction between, I would say, Musk and those guys is that those people are persons of thought, while he's a person of thought and action. He's building companies using his own personal wealth. Jeff Bezos is also. But
what's
his
name? The guy from England, Richard Branson.
No, Richard Branson.
Space.
No, I got love
Virgin
for Richard
Galactic.
Branson. I haven't got a lot of love for Richard Branson because he screwed over the NHS and all kinds of things. But we won't get into that. But yeah. You know, I'll let you speak because you're the one that has the contrarian opinion when it comes to Elon
saying,
Musk.
I'm just saying, this isn't about Elon Musk. This is about his hypothesis that an extinction event is the reason why we need to colonize Mars. This is what I think about Elon Musk. At the end of the day, he is still operating in a capitalist system, right? He is still trying to be the richest man in the world. He's trying to be Iron Man or whatever comic book character out there. And it's just a lot better to say, I'm going to save humanity from extinction by taking us to Mars, instead of saying, I want to be the first man to colonize Mars so I can be the richest and most powerful man in the universe.
No, but hold on. If I said to you, I'll become the most richest person on Earth, this wouldn't be how you would do it. This wouldn't be how you... There's so much more easier ways of becoming the richest person on Earth than trying to set up a rocket company. Like that, the rate of failure on a rocket company and a car company and a...
But...
I can't even remember the other companies does
right,
this.
But following this narrative, right? Following this narrative, if there is an extinction event and all the rich people on Earth are like, I don't want to die. The only option, he's saying, is to go to Mars. And the only way you can get there is SpaceX. So he's monopolizing survival. Mm.
But,
I'm playing devil's avocado here.
But the thing is, if there was an alternative where, for example, there were already rocket ship companies and then he purchased all of them and it's all under one umbrella and therefore it's a monopoly, I would agree. But he's building things that haven't and don't exist, essentially. So in that sense, he deserves his monopoly. And he in the article, I don't have the full quote, but essentially someone was saying, is this not going to be just a rich person's getaway?
Of course it is.
He said no, because... it's so high risk that the type of people that are going to do this are the people that went to Antarctica, the type of people that, you know, got on a boat.
They were all rich people.
Oh, they were... Okay, yeah, fair enough. They
like that
were.
British guy that climbed Mount Everest.
Is it Shackleton? This is why we need a fact checker.
Shackleton, I was thinking of the DJ. Like
Shackleton is the guy that went to Antarctica, I think. He's like an explorer. Okay. So we're talking about two different people, but...
That comment... epitomizes my frustration with the discussion around multiplanetary humanity, exploring space, etc. You mentioned the NHS earlier. I'm not going to say we go into details, but let's just look at healthcare.
Mm.
Let's just look at healthcare as an example. Let's draw an analogy between going to space and having decent healthcare.
Mm.
Right now, God forbid something horrible happens to you, right?
Touch wood.
The person who's going, let's say two people get sick with the same illness and one of them is very rich and one of them is very poor. Mm. Who has a higher chance of survival?
Of course, the rich person, yeah.
Thank you. Now, let's say space is an option, right?
Mm-hmm.
And an atomic bomb goes off and we're in a nuclear wasteland and we can go to Mars.
Oh, yeah, we're screwed.
There's a very rich man and a very poor man.
Of course, the rich person.
You're telling me
the
very poor man's going to go because he's more adventurous.
No, you're absolutely right.
That's what I'm saying.
You're absolutely right.
But why would that be any different to how it is now?
But even on Earth... if there was a nuclear event, who would be most likely to survive? Who would have a nuclear, you know, shelter?
Exactly.
A rich person.
Rich people.
So, yeah, he's not changing anything, but he's not necessarily exacerbating anything either, is he? We already live in a world where there are inequalities.
And it's not his fault. But what I'm saying is, all the people who are like, Elon's taking me to Mars, wake up.
Yeah, you ain't going.
You ain't going.
To be honest, I don't want to go either. I'm not maybe send about 100,000 people there first, test it out for me, then I'll then come hollering.
When you get the high-speed Wi-Fi, I'll be there, but until then...
he was also saying that once we've set up base there and like all the basic infrastructure is available, then it will be a massive entrepreneurial opportunity because there won't be bars. There won't be anything. There won't be, you know, plumbing. There won't, like... it's like starting from ground zero all over again. So,
do you know what would be incredible?
There will be a lot of entrepreneurial people that would be like, okay, I'm going over there. I'm setting up a venture. That would be amazing.
You know when they do those infographics where it was like all of the world in 100 people? And it was like, oh, if all of the world were 100 people, then 40-something would be men, 50-something would be women. This many would be black. This many would be Jewish. This many would be disabled, blah, 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 blah. They should do that for the first Mars mission.
Yeah, that's true.
So they should be like, you know.
So you'd have to send 1 or 2 billionaires because like in 100, there would be like 1 or 2 billionaires, wouldn't there?
I think when you do it by numbers.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Actually.
Okay, yeah, 1 or 2 then, but like still. And then like the rich people could revolt and the poor people could revolt and kill them if they want. I'm not giving you ideas. I'm just saying. But that would be such an interesting social experiment because like the way it's looking now, Mars is just going to be like... Jeff in his jacuzzi, Elon in his jacuzzi, surrounded by like, I don't know, Playboy bunnies or something.
Or sex robots.
Or maybe both.
Listen to episode 1 for that.
But yeah, I would like, I guess one of the reasons why I get really agitated is because I just get very frustrated and concerned that all of the things that annoy us and are broken here will continue to annoy us and be broken over there when there is really an opportunity to start fresh. Like, if this world blows up, let's do better wherever else we go, if we are alive.
Coming up next, our next winner and loser, and this is definitely a winner. These guys are definitely winners. Apple. They are now approaching $1 trillion valuation. Whew. Now, if you want to talk about issues on earth.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't even know how many commas is in a trillion. Is that four commas? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I was going to say it's an
twelve zeros, oh, isn't it?
I was going to say it's an unquantifiable amount of money, but it's the complete opposite. It's a very quantifiable amount of money. But to the average person, it is unquantifiable.
Oh,
you can't fathom $1 trillion. Like you.
What's the most amount of commas anyone here has ever seen in their bank account? Talk about like the 3-comma club. Yeah. Now we're in the 4-comma club.
It's ridiculous.
I'm in the 0-comma club. I mean,
more power
club.
To them. Like they are an amazing company, and they probably do. If anybody deserves it, they probably do deserve it. But it's, what does it say?
That's so interesting. Do you think that they do deserve it? Do you think Apple of the 2010s is Apple of the 2000s?
Basically, post Steve Jobs, have they deserved it? No, not really. I think they've maintained a steady ship since Jobs has passed away and have just kind of eked out, you know, just the same iteration of the same product with slight improvements. And there's not a whole lot of innovation. Supposedly the AirPod, is it the AirPod?
AirPods, yeah.
Supposedly they're half decent. I don't know. I've heard good things about them. I don't own any.
But the thing is, I don't trust people that listen to Apple headphones, because if you really want to listen to music, you want that bass. You want so many better headphones out there.
But I've heard it's really good for like even just talking and just general talking to Siri and stuff like that. But yeah, more power to them. I mean, yeah, you're right. I think in the post-job era, they haven't done much. You know, if you look at what Steve Jobs did, he took over in 90... I think in the late 90s, they were on the verge of bankruptcy. Mm. And he released the iMac, which is the colourful one. And
yes.
He released the iPod,
yes.
iPhone, and iPad. And some people have said it's the greatest run in corporate history, basically, because he took them from the verge of bankruptcy to the most valued company in the world. So how do you top that? So Tim Cook wasn't necessarily a product visionary. He was head of operations. He was kind of steady the ship.
Mm.
Let's make the company as profitable as possible. Keep it going. And they've kept it going for about 8 years.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they had a lot to work with. Do they deserve it? Apple is an interesting one, because I think once you reach this level of value, you should have a certain responsibility to the society that you participate in.
Mm.
And I don't think that Apple is as sustainable a company as it could be. Mm. And I also think that Apple, you know, the profit margins on their products are obscene. We've seen the conditions in the factories in China.
Mm.
We've heard about the suicides that have happened in Foxconn.
Right.
They had to install like anti-suicide nets. I mean, really, really dark stuff here. And every year a new iPhone comes out, people line up all around the block. I mean, we've spoken about this before, but I do get like a bit annoyed by this, like, oh, there's a new iPhone, just drop this one on the floor, run out and get the other one.
But supposedly they haven't sold as many as was expected. So the last month they released their report and analysts were slightly disappointed. Despite that, the stock has gone up 40%.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's crazy. But I do think the tide is turning in a sense that people are not lapping up these new phones as much as they once were. There isn't much difference, really and truly. I've had an iPhone 6 for the last 3-4 years and I haven't got any real incentive to upgrade.
Yeah,
I don't
other
see
than
why
the camera,
I
do think the camera is amazing. And I guess
I'm not that vain. I'm just like, all right, cool, great camera, but like, is that enough for me to cough up the money to upgrade?
It's so interesting because I kind of feel like, particularly in like the millennial generation, the iPod couldn't have come at a more perfect time because we were carting our Discmen all around.
Sony Walkman.
Like,
if you're too young to remember, like, we used to carry around these big things that you'd have to put a CD in.
A CD? Who even owns CDs anymore? And you would, like, then you would try to, like, rip your own CDs, like, sorry, legal authorities, but, you know, using, LimeWire. Or, like...
That shit used to F up my computer. Oh, my Lord.
Kazaa? You remember Kazaa? Yeah. I had Kazaa.
This is a podcast of criminals. We've been stealing since 2000.
I was a rebellious teen. But yeah, and then you would burn it and it would take so long. And I remember getting an iPod. I remember seeing the TV advert. I remember the TV commercials were always really cool. I was in America one summer and they had this like cool commercial going. And I just remember saying to my mom, I was like, I want one. I think we went to like Costco or Best Buy or something and I got an iPod.
Mm.
It wasn't the first one. It was the one which had like the wheel and the four buttons at the top like orange and the back of the screen was blue.
Yeah.
Man, and then suddenly I had all of my songs and other songs and it was just amazing. And there's definitely like a real kind of like romanticism because that was me just locked into Macs then and there. Like as soon as I could move away from Windows, I was like, I need a MacBook.
Yeah.
I need iTunes. Funnily enough, I really don't use iTunes anymore at all.
It's done.
I actually think
it's done. I mean, download our podcast on iTunes, obviously. obviously.
Podcast app as well.
Yeah, the podcast app. I use the podcast app.
They spun out the podcast app because iTunes is so clunky.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, again, people in creative roles are like, oh, you know, OS is amazing. Mac OS is amazing.
Mm.
I find Windows super awkward. But then at the same time, people are, like you say, jumping ship, going to Android for their mobile devices, going to, I don't know, Lenovo for their MacBooks or Microsoft Surface or whatever. So it is interesting to see, like, you know, how will Apple maintain this stronghold in the long run and how will they continue to innovate when that's really what they're known for?
Because
they set that bar so high under Steve Jobs' reign that pretty much everything since has been disappointing, other than the AirPods.
I would agree. I mean, the watch didn't really pop off, to be honest.
Do you have an Apple Watch?
I don't know.
No, most people I know, the last time I saw someone with an Apple Watch, I was like, do you even use it? And she hadn't noticed it wasn't even on.
Well, what I would say actually is that it's the most highest selling watch. So despite the fact that we're like,
really?
Wow. Yeah, it's completely destroyed. Like, not destroyed, but like in terms of market share, if you look at the Swiss watch industry, they've taken a beating.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, because Apple is so big that if they just put their watches in their store, just their stores alone, it's going to sell a ridiculous amount of volume.
Apple TV. Apple TV is doing well.
Yeah.
Maybe they just need to, like, get involved in other products. Maybe that's what Apple needs to do.
I mean, there was rumors they were going to do a car, but it just never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they looked into it.
Autonomous vehicle.
I don't know about an autonomous vehicle, but they were going to do a car. I think they saw what Musk, speaking of the devil, they saw what Musk was doing with Tesla, and they were like, maybe we can do this. because...
We should have an Elon Musk penny jar. Every time someone mentions Elon Musk, I get a dollar. I'll be a millionaire by the end of the week. I mean, I'd love to know, this is what the fact checker could look into, but like, what are other $1 trillion companies? And like, what does that mean for the rest of us? I do not own Apple shares. And now I'm sad.
Okay, that I don't. I will admit that I do.
Okay, yeah. See, this is why we're talking about this.
This is why I brought it up, guys. Of course I'm joking. I do own some. But I don't think there are any other $1 trillion. I think that's why it's so notable. I think Apple will be the first $1 trillion company. Yeah, I don't think there are any.
Wow.
There are companies that are valued at $1 trillion that are privately held. So, for example, the Saudi National Oil Company is worth trillions. But you've got to imagine, I don't know what percentage of the oil market the Saudis own, but it's a massive business.
Yeah.
The fact that Apple is even in the same conversation as an organization that produces oil.
That's been producing oil for hundreds of years, and Apple's been around for a few decades.
Right. No. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the 70s, you're completely right. Yeah. It's crazy. I wanted to touch upon something. Actually, so there's two paths we can go on. I wanted to say, what does this mean about wealth inequality? And what can... Because often we do take a critical eye at a lot of these companies in power. We want to hold their feet to the fire, and we have our own views and opinions. But what can us as individuals that are running startups with our own career, what can we learn from what Apple has done over the last 15, 20 years?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, I'll start with the second one, because a part of you thinks, like, you know, the revolution in home computing, personal smartphones, personal music devices, etc. Apple, was at the forefront of all of those things. And, like, a part of you might think, oh, will that even ever happen again? Like, to become the next Apple, you have to anticipate what will be that indispensable device that you put your proprietary technology into, develop hardware as well as software, monopolize that part of the market, eventually, I guess, charge insane margins as well because you build this huge brand that you've pumped marketing and PR into. I don't know. Maybe it will be the next autonomous vehicle or the next personal assistant company. But it's going to have to be that you're going to have to tap into your sci-fi brain and think, you know, humans of the future, what will be that one thing that they cannot live without? And that will be the thing you build.
Yeah. So I think I read it in 0 to 1, which is the Peter Thiel books, regardless of what you think about the guy. He basically starts off saying that the next Mark Zuckerberg will not build a social network.
Of course not.
The next Bill Gates will not build an operating system. So what Apple did with personal computing, you have to look, just to reiterate what you're saying, what are the industries of the future that will be indispensable to humanity in the next 20 to 30 years?
Mars suits, space suits.
There we go.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or living forever. I think living forever is going to be like a huge obsession of, you know, people who are young now, especially the closer we get to traveling around space, the closer we get to, you know, with quantum computing coming in, the possibilities of time travel become realistic, potentially. So I think something along this idea of, like, longevity, extending longevity.
So that's your bet. So if I said to you, listen,
Just saying that's one of them.
That's your bear.
You send me that deck. Yeah. I might go in.
So I'm starting a live forever company.
Neuralink.
Yeah. The one thing I would also say about Apple is that design matters. That's the one thing that I think they've taken to the next level, in the sense that, you know, Microsoft were quite a functional company.
Yes.
They were of the belief that if you get something to people that's cheap as possible and as effective as possible, people will lap it up.
Yes.
And Apple were kind of like, design matters, brand matters.
Of course.
And I don't, and I mean, at the point where Apple was struggling, I think people thought the inverse, that actually what you want is something that's really scalable, cheap, mass produced, and to as many people as possible. Almost the Amazon model, essentially.
Who were thinking that? You mean Microsoft were thinking
that? I think the industry at the time didn't think that there was a space for people to have high-end premium computers or premium devices that they would pay a premium for just based off brand and design. Yes. So, and this is, this all comes down to Steve Jobs again. And I don't necessarily like the whole, you know, one great man version of history, but to a certain extent, he is the person that represents it the most. That if you're building a startup, if you're building a product or a service, put time into that design. It bloody matters. Like, it really does make a big difference.
Yeah. I think also, you know, connected to that is like this acknowledgement that we are very like status driven.
Yeah.
And I remember reading in, I think it's Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, about the virality of those white earphones, those white headphones, and how once you saw them, you're like, oh, they've got an iPod. You're like, oh, I want an iPod.
Yeah.
And then you'd wear your headphones and you'd feel so proud that you're a part of this cult of people that had the latest music technology, thousands of songs in their pocket. And
it is inherently viral, isn't it, right?
Yeah. And same kind of thing with the MacBook. So the aluminum shell MacBooks came out late 2008 when I was still at university. And I remember getting one for Christmas along with everyone else at my university, but I remember like going into the library.
Mom, what are you doing for me? Like, what was mine?
But I remember like, I was like so proud to like be in the library, like first term after Christmas, got out my like aluminum MacBook, like look around, everyone had one. And I was like, oh, but then I was just like, yeah, well, at least I'm with the cool kids. Cause all the people bringing out their like black plastic dolls. I was like,
I guess, you make your product remarkable in the sense of the word remarkable. People will remark upon your product. Yes. If they see it, they'll be like, oh, what's that? Or they'll notice it if they see a whole bunch of people have it.
That said, values change. And even though design is important, this is just like a footnote to what I'm saying, I guess. Even though design is important, as time goes on, it'll be more important to design something which is biodegradable, sustainable, lower carbon footprint, etc. So if you are thinking of what's going to be this future, you know, Apple killer, $1 trillion company thing, try and also take into account how people's tastes are changing and make sure that your design principles are based not only on aesthetics, but also on values, like emotional values.
Yeah, for real. I got one last point to make about the lessons from Apple. The last one is simplicity. And what I mean by that is I read a story about how when Jobs came back to Apple, at a time Apple had printers, they had the Newton, which was like some early version of a tablet. They had a lot of products that we wouldn't necessarily...
The Palm Pilot kind of thing, yeah.
So he came in and he went on a whiteboard. He did a four-by-four quadrant. He drew on the board and said, we're going to do a high-end computer for personal branding, for personal uses, high-end for enterprise, low-end computer for personal uses, low-end enterprise. That's all we're doing. Everything else is getting cut.
I want to know what was on the axes then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it was an axis. He just literally just drew four boxes and each one had a product in them.
Right.
And it was like, that's all we're doing. All 10, 20 other products that we're doing, cut it. And there's something about focus.
Oh,
saying no to things. I can...
that's a quote.
You might always get pitched products. Yeah, there is, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you might get pitched. If you're working on a startup, someone's like, why don't we add this feature? Why don't we add this? Why don't we add this product? Be careful. Like, sometimes it's just focusing on what you do already and what you do best is actually the most important thing that you can do.
Mm. I always think, you know, if you are building software, hardware, find that single use case that you can do exceptionally well. It's always better to just be known for one thing you can do exceptionally well before you try and, like, please everyone and do everything. Spotify, algorithm, MailChimp, CRM. Like, you know, you just think of these sticky products and they do one thing and they do it brilliantly. They do other things as well, but it's that one thing that they're exceptional at that keeps people loyal to them and builds their brand. Oh, I want to talk about augmented reality.
Go on. What's popping with AR?
So, well, Bose announced in the news that they're getting into augmented reality glasses, which is obviously super interesting because Magic Leap announced that they're finally going to release their first product just before Christmas. But interestingly, Bose, who are famous for their headphones, their noise-canceling headphones, have said that it's going to be the first audio augmented platform.
So it's headphones, not glasses, that Bose are doing?
Well, it's glasses to hear.
What?
Yeah. So they're going to have Bose AR glasses. I'm guessing that it's going to be some kind of headphone and glasses connected combo interface thing. Yeah.
Wow.
But the reason I wanted to talk about that was because, you know, when you read the tech news, flick through the tech news or work in tech, there's always a lot of conversations going on around AR, VR, often linked within the wearable space as well. Now, I have not had a chance to play with the latest Oculus, but I've certainly played with HTC Hive and stuff like that.
I have not tried any of this.
I've always found the experience relatively underwhelming.
Oh, seriously?
Only once did I try on Oculus Rift at the National Geographic Society in London, and they had put in images of that a climber had taken during the summer in the Swiss Alps. So you basically turn it on, or put it on rather, and you're hanging and off you're the edge of a cliff face.
Oh, Lord have
and
mercy.
And you look down and you're like, whoa, and then you look up and you're like, whoa, and you look around. It's almost funnier to be the person not wearing them. So you can like watch the person doing it. There's a really funny gif of someone like falling over. But yeah, other than Oculus Rift, which in my opinion is still a bit too expensive for me to invest in, the HTC ones, which is just, you know, you put the mobile phone into the headset, I've found a bit janky, if I'm honest.
It's definitely early. Like, it's, I think we're at the...
But I feel like VR, like, I remember being a kid in the 90s and they were talking about VR, right? And so it's been around a while. Why isn't it good and accessible at consumer electronic level yet?
I don't know why. I think it's... Do you think it's a hype then? You think it's a bubble?
I'm not saying it's a bubble. I'm just saying, like, I would love to just hear other people's experiences of AR. Like, maybe I'm not playing with the right devices. Maybe I'm being, you know, too... whatever, reticent or hesitant about it, but
we should get like a VR developer to come in and just
that'd be good,
like,
actually.
Yeah, because I don't have much to add, really. I haven't had that much experience with it, and I've noticed what you've noticed in the sense that there doesn't seem to be a killer application beyond games.
There have been some interesting applications within healthcare, which I thought was fascinating. There was like a woman that gave birth while wearing an AR headset, looking at images of like the beach or something, because it was really relaxing. No, seriously, like she had anxiety about giving birth, so they gave her this like experimental thing. So she was just like transported to another place, and then the birth went fine. So that is kind of interesting. And then maybe with things like, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever, like there'll be some applications for it there. But yeah, I just feel that it's one of those things that's often spoken about, I guess, similar to blockchain.
Which I also said that I was skeptical. I was starting to become skeptical about it. I was listening back to some of my early episodes, and I was saying, yeah, I was quite skeptical.
When
the technology is
more
talked about than I actually see being used in everyday life, it's when I'm like, there's something amiss here. And I don't know. I was reading up on Magic Leap, and they've raised about $2 billion. And I don't know much what they've done.
Leap is crazy. A news story came out just the other week that they're in talks to raise $400 million.
Is it from the Saudis?
From the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, yes. That would take their total investment to $2.3 billion. They have still not released a product.
Yeah. I was looking at their site.
That's crazy.
And
people said that
some of the applications do look amazing, especially as a developer, where you can actually have 3 or 4 screens around you, essentially.
Is that how?
Yeah,
wow.
There's potential to do that. So I can see as a work application, it would be pretty handy. As a developer, I would love to have that because, you know, I have 3 or 4 screens at home.
I was just about to ask you, actually, like, side note, how many screens do you work with? 3 or 4?
3.
Like, at what point does it become diminishing returns? Because I've in the past had 2 screens, up to 3 screens, and now I'm just down to 1 screen, because at the end of the day, I've got 2 eyes, and they can only look in one direction.
But sometimes I'm like, I want to have, you know, the actual website up if I'm coding something, and then at the same time I also want to have a screen where I've just got my code up, so I don't necessarily have to, you know,
switch between tabs.
I'm
just switching between tabs
as a level of efficiency. But I've seen some real crazy setups where it's like 3 or 4
5
screens,
ridiculous,
and they're giant and they're really tall, and it's just like, yeah,
it's too much. Just flip between tabs. I don't know, like, having gone through the whole evolution, I'm just like single screen. I'm all minimalist now.
Oh Lord,
keep it simple. No, seriously, I'm not joking. Okay, winners and losers. Okay, I think we've done a lot enough winning and losing tonight.
Let's head to our growth section. What do you want to talk about?
So I wanted to talk to you about a topic I'm asked all the time. Abba, be my mentor. How do I find a mentor? Mentor. It's not exclusive to tech, obviously.
It's in all industries.
Yeah, you want a mentor. You want someone to just help you find your way, push you in the right direction, move you onwards and upwards. I guess what I wanted to ask, maybe start a bit of a little debate here. What does it mean to be a mentor, and has mentorship changed?
Because what does it mean to be a mentor?
Because I feel that, like, in the olden times, let's say, you know, in law, I know people are still lawyers, but I think of law as just some old ass.
It's a traditional industry.
The idea was, you know, you start really young, you maybe a graduate trainee, you find a mentor who's like a partner, like someone, one of the most senior people you have access to, and you use that relationship to develop and grow over the many years it takes to go from the bottom of the rung to the top rung. And I guess the reason why I feel that that type of relationship isn't relevant in our industry of technology is that the lifespan of careers, in fact, the lifespan of tech companies is just so much shorter.
Yeah.
And by consequence, the career paths we take are very much scattered across different companies, as opposed to spending, you know, 15, 20 years rising up through one. And, you know, for that reason, you know, some of the people I admire within the tech industry have had 3 or 4 jobs in the 7 years that I've known them.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, do you need a mentor to be someone that's holding your hand throughout a long period of time? Or can a mentor just be the person that gives you what you need to know or what connection you need when you need it?
The traditional model of mentorship, I've never experienced it. I've never had anybody that's been around my career for a long period of time and I can just call them up and get guidance on every single issue or problem that I faced.
Yeah.
And I think if I had this conversation with you maybe 2 years ago, I would have said, oh, I've never had a mentor. But what I would say is that I've had to rethink my career interactions and look back upon times when, you know, I've worked in a startup and, you know, the CTO has kind of just said, oh, why don't you try this? Guide me in certain directions, or, you know, just the odd word of advice. And I've had to look back and say, actually, that was a form of mentorship.
Oh, definitely.
You know, it wasn't, it's not what you'd consider to be the stereotype of a mentor. And also what I would say in tech is that sometimes your mentors are actually younger than you, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, the lifespan of a startup is so short, or a tech company is so short, that somebody who has expertise in AI or somebody who has expertise in VR while you've been doing something else is most likely going to be younger than you. So,
for sure.
You know, you can't, you have to set aside ego, and help can come from many places, essentially.
What I think is a really, like, reassuring and positive trend that I see in tech, which I love, is the rise of communities. You know, whether that's the community in your co-working space, whether that's a paid co-working space like the ones we talked about already, or like a free co-working space like Google Campus, maybe your university library, I don't know. You find within those communities people that have some type of expertise that you don't have, whether that's a technical skill that you don't have, or public speaking skills that you don't have, or maybe even connections that you don't have, like, oh, I used to work here, or I used to study there, or I know someone over there. And I think tech is all about networks.
Yeah.
Because it's still a very young industry. It's still still not necessarily got that infrastructure that consulting has, or engineering, you know, as in traditional engineering. So for that reason, I think being a part of those communities and just making sure that you have as many connections as possible and that you are also being a valuable connection to other people, that can get you as far, if not further, than one single mentor could get you.
What do you think about, what's the correct etiquette? You mentioned this in your book, so I'm going to, I've read Abba's book and it's amazing. Everybody go get that now.
Dude, open have you up written my Amazon review though?
What do you mean?
Amazon review.
Which one?
I need an Amazon review.
I wrote one for you.
Oh, thanks.
There we go. Come on.
Just check it.
As soon as I got the book, I wrote one.
Okay, yay.
Yeah, I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. So you mentioned this in your amazing book.
Yeah.
Dream Big, Hustle Hard. Go get that.
Thanks, man.
That about what's the correct etiquette to approach someone to be your mentor?
Great question.
You know what? You are now someone who's quite senior in your career to a certain extent. So am I now as well. So sometimes people do reach out to you and say, can we get coffee? Can I pick your brains? And I've seen people tweet, people that are probably much bigger than me in their career, and they're saying, my least favorite phrase in the world is, can I pick your brain?
Yes.
Right. So what's the correct way of doing it? Is there a blueprint?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I'm asked that all the time. Like, I would probably say, like, rule number one, and, you know, Sheryl Sandberg says this in Lean in as well. Don't ask someone to be your mentor.
So never use the M word.
Like, just don't use the M word. Don't drop the M bomb. I say this in my book because the thing is, it's like... Because
as soon as you hear that word, you're like,
it sounds like a job.
It's long.
Exactly. It's long.
Time consuming. I don't have time for this kind of thing.
And it sounds... Yeah. And it's just like, oh, you're just going to come here, ask me all these questions. Like, I'm being, you know, a bit harsh here, but because people ask me stuff all the time. But I'm being honest.
Somebody who's in their career senior, they don't have time.
One of the easiest things, like I've already mentioned, is getting into a community where potential mentor-like people will be. Because by the very nature of community, you know, I'm thinking of places like YSYS, there's Indie Hackers, you know, all of these, you know, Leap, Y Combinator, you know, the list goes on, Ada's List, there's so many, People of Color in Tech. Well, you have all of these informal groups of people that are united by working in tech or being interested in startups or being interested in tech. And they span all different ages, all different types of roles. I am in many of these. Mm. Instead of you saying, dropping me a note on LinkedIn, oh, hey, Ab, I want to be your mentor. I would much rather see you being active in that community, sharing articles, talking about the work that you're doing, maybe telling me that you've already read my book and there's something else that I've not answered in the book that you want to know. But I'm always more willing to help people, kind of like the saying in the Bible, but you know, like heaven helps those that help themselves.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about people. Like when people have been like, I have done XYZ, and then they've shown me that they've put effort in, but there's still that one stone they can't turn over. I'm more willing to help them. So get involved in communities. Do everything that you can yourself first. I mentioned this in my book as well. Like, if you meet people for a coffee date, let's say you meet me for a coffee date, don't meet me for a coffee date and then be like, oh, how do you start a business? Because you can put that into Google and watch YouTube videos and you can read books or whatever.
Nah, I would walk out.
You need
out,
to
you
be asked. No, seriously, I would walk out.
I'd be like, yo, this ain't right.
You need to be asking me something that the internet couldn't answer, that my book couldn't answer, that any of the many articles I've written online couldn't answer. Why did I write my book? Mm. I wrote my book so that I wouldn't have to have the same conversation with thousands of people. So in a way, it's almost like disrespectful of someone's time. If you're just like, oh, can you tell me how to get a career in tech?
As an individual,
I'm just like, well, actually, no, because I've written about that many, many times. And it's not very sensible for me to now spend time doing that for you. So, you know, don't ask people to be a mentor. Just join communities, add value to those communities, and then reciprocally take stuff in return. And then also, don't be shy about being very useful to people. There's one guy who's just been, like, incredible. Shout out Matt. He's from LBS on business school. He kind of approached me to see if we could help through Product Hunt with an event that he was organizing at school. And, like, we could give him swag, but he wanted a speaker. We couldn't speak. We didn't have time. Since then, he's been, like, following me on Twitter. Like, anytime I say anything, he'll, like, retweet it. As soon as my book came out, he was like, oh, can I help you organize a talk with students at my uni? Like, he suggested all these people. He made the introductions. He booked the room, boom, 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 boom. And then he was like, okay, now can I ask you for some careers advice because I'm not really sure about X, Y, Z? And, of course, I said yes.
Yeah.
Because by that point in time, it's like I almost was in debt to him. So, you know, if you feel like you have nothing to give, that's rubbish. Like, you have stuff to give. You have time. You have ideas. You have connections.
Yeah.
Be sensible. Put your business hat on. At the end of the day, you want to work in tech. You want to start a business. Show me that you're entrepreneurial and show the people you want to mentor you that you're entrepreneurial. So do something entrepreneurial. Do something problem solving. Be useful to them and then ask for the opportunity. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
I think that's good.
I think I would corroborate. I would back up most of, if not all of what you said. I think it's interesting because when people enter the world of work, they think the basic principles of personal relationships don't exist. So asking things of people that you don't necessarily know, you wouldn't necessarily do that in your day-to-day life unless you've already are going to, you know, provide them value. Or
like, you don't go up to a guy in a bus stop and be like, yo man, can I come around to your house and use your internet?
Or you wouldn't go up to somebody and say, can you be my friend, which is what you're asking.
So when you're
asking for a mentorship relationship, we use these words, mentor, networking, but essentially we're talking about friendships here, where you give and you return in like. So you wouldn't go up to somebody and say, would you be my friend? No, you would establish a relationship with somebody organically.
Yes.
Help them, they'd help you, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's what I found. Like, I don't... The word mentor doesn't really mean much to me because I don't necessarily... It's quite a false... Not a false word, but it's an inorganic word.
Exactly.
To describe a situation that might have existed historically where you've had apprenticeships.
Yes.
But we're not under that model anymore.
A mentor is just a source of assistance, a source of guidance.
At a certain time, and it could be multiple people.
Yes.
In 2018, that's how it's got to be. You're not going to get that one
no.
Master Yoda type dude that's going to sit down with you
exactly.
and give you the game. It's not going to happen.
In fact, that was the other thing I want to mention while we're talking about it. I meet a lot of people who almost speak as if the mentor is the silver bullet missing from their career.
The key.
You know what
if
I mean?
If I only had a mentor, like, everything yes, would make sense.
Exactly. Like, and I'm just like, actually, no, because at the end of the day, a mentor, like any good coach or anything else, can only turn that mirror back on you. Like, if you don't know what you want to do with your life, a mentor is not going to help you know what you want to do, how to do that.
You know what's
do you
the,
see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know what's the biggest faux pas? I just come to mind that, actually. So when People of Color in Tech was in TechCrunch, it got shared within the Eritrean community, which is the community where I'm from.
Hello.
So a lot of the parents were like, can you, like, mentor my child? And when I say child, they're, like, 17, 18. They're in sixth form college. They're about to go to university. And I was like, okay, well, here's my email and here's my phone number. If they contact me,
I'll mentor them.
Yeah, I'll mentor them. I didn't hear anything because it was the desire. I don't know, what was the biblical quote you used?
And so they heaven wanted, helps those who
yeah,
help themselves.
Yeah, like I can't carry you. Like, you've got to show these some initiative. Like, and that really irked me, actually, thinking back to it now.
That's true. So yeah, don't
expect your mentor to work more than you.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how I'm going to phrase it. Like,
I love that.
Yeah, don't like, yeah, what's the phrase? I think someone wants to, like, I don't mind carrying a person, but don't drag your feet.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? Like, I'll put you on my back and carry you for a little while.
Yes.
But don't drag your feet. Like, come on, get exactly. with it kind of thing. Like,
get your ideas fully formed. Do your research.
Yeah, do your research.
And use the mentor for the thing that you cannot do, right? So you want to work out, you know, Google, whatever. You've read everything you can about Google. You've watched all the videos. You've, you know, practiced the questions, but you don't have that network connection. You don't have that intro to help with the application. That's when you ask for help.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're so right. Do as much of the legwork as you can and be prepared. And also, that's also just like a demonstration of your commitment.
Mm.
And if this sounds too hard for you, then you're probably not going to get very far in tech.
Mm. Yeah, real talk. And
it's
to be honest as well,
industry.
Like with like the availability of so much information out there, YouTube, books, like, you can have mentors that you've never met. As cheesy as
yes.
it sounds. It sounds so cheesy.
Oprah is my mentor.
When someone said that to me, oh, like, you know, I've got all these mentors and they're in books. At first, I just rolled my eyes. I was like, yeah, but they're not really going to, you know, do ish for you. But it really does, actually.
Of course.
I have spent hours
TED Talks.
On YouTube just watching, like, super smart people dropping knowledge. And
it's
helped guide my career. In fact, I got into tech based off a podcast that I used to listen to called This Week in Startups. And that's what inspired me. Like, I was interested in starting a business. And then I went on YouTube and I was just looking at, you know, what are the best businesses. And then I got down a rabbit hole of tech. And then I found a tech podcast. And it was an interview with Eric Ries from The Lean Startup.
Oh my God, yes. That's one of the first tech books I ever read,
exactly,
actually.
Yeah. And I watched the interview and then I bought the book.
Amazing.
And I didn't know much about it. And I was like, okay, I'm in.
I'm hooked.
That's a mentor. I've never met the person.
I agree.
They don't know me from Adam, but they, to a certain extent, they've changed my life.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. Yeah. That's so true. Thanks for bringing that up. Don't underestimate the value that you get from content. I think that with, like, TED Talks. Some TED Talks have changed my life.
Which ones? I want to find
like
them.
Brené Brown, The Power of Vulnerability.
Don't know that one.
Recommend it. Highly
recommend
it.
I think I get the gist of it, though. Be vulnerable.
Yeah. There's actually a really... But basically, don't let shame stop you from being who you are.
Yeah, that's real talk.
But yeah, cool. I think we've come up to our hour, actually.
Yeah, call it a day.
Plug stuff.
I think it's getting boring because I always plug the same stuff.
So yeah, but it's cool, man.
Yeah, so check out peopleofcolorintech.com. If you're looking for work or jobs, check out pocketjobs.com, which is our recruitment platform. You can create a profile. It's very similar to LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And Abba.
I was just going to say, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please share your feedback with us, hashtag techish. I read every tweet, every SoundCloud comment.
Me too.
It fills my heart with joy. Michael does as well. We screenshot them, text each other late at night and go, hey man, look.
No, but seriously, they really love us.
it's always great to hear your feedback. We want to make every episode better.
And reviews on iTunes, if possible, as well. Did you mention that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, reviews on iTunes, good. As many as you can, like...
just getting people to write more than one.
Double up if you have to.
Log in on multiple emails. But yeah, I was just going to say, you know, we talked a bit about mentorship. If you're listening to this podcast and you feel that you need some support or help, please reach out to me. You can find me on Twitter, @abadesi. You can go on hustlecrew.co. You can visit nontechtech.com, which is our mentorship directory launching soon. Both Michael and I are on a mission to break barriers to tech and make it easier for everyone to get involved in the industry. So never hesitate to reach out, but don't ask us to be your mentor.
Don't use the M word, despite all of what we said.
Don't use the M word.
Yeah.
Cool, see you next time.
Ciao, peace out. Adios.